They followed him in life and became his voice after his death. Christ's apostles went forth to spread the good news to the four corners of the earth after Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. Some stayed close to the Holy Land, but others, like Paul and Peter, traveled farther afield. I asked Father Bernie O'Connor of the Pontifical Council for Eastern Churches, where did Christ's disciples end up? Some, like Thomas, went as far east as India. And just what was an apostle in biblical times?
Certainly in the Hebrew Scriptures, what Christians refer to as the Old Testament, and in the non-religious literature of the era, we find the reference to an apostle as one who's delegated, who's sent forth on a mission, particularly to a foreign country. The term actually comes from Greek and literally means that. So if I were ruler of an area, I may want to send my delegate to another king or to a subservient area under my jurisdiction to collect taxes. So the sending forth the delegation becomes the basis of your notion of apostle. Now, among Jesus' disciples, you see the term becoming nuanced. And it's always very important to remember that terms such as apostle and bishop and of that nature are never complete and entire at any one point in time. That the understanding and the development of the term is evolutionary, it's progressive. Well, what do we see about the 12, as they're called in the New Testament? We see a variety of continuity points. They too are delegated. Christ himself was a delegate from God, an apostle, according to the letter to the Hebrews. We're told that the apostles delegated subordinates to go out and teach in their name also. Barnabas, for example, in the Acts of the Apostles. So basic bottom line, when we hear the term used in the New Testament, what are we talking about? A special vocation, a kind of formal appointment from the Lord to a determined office with connected authorities and duties, and to go forth and spread the Christian message. So when Judas committed his treason, and the apostles had to assemble to choose a successor, Matthias, what were they looking for? They wanted someone who was a witness of Christ, who had been with him in a certain sense. St. Paul picks up on this and said he was not with Jesus in his ministry, but witness to the resurrection. Yes, this was a person who would be a herald of the gospel, who would be sent forth, who would have a role of healing and a role of casting out demons. It's kind of strange to our mentality. But think of it as reconciler, one who looks at those things that thwart our being, that frustrate and anger and divide us as people. And the apostles are those who want to bring healing physically, spiritually, socially to this kind of setting. So basic bottom line, the function of an apostle to govern, to preach doctrine as a witness, to administer the sacred rites, to make laws, to speak with authority, to provide successors to their own number, even to act in a way that would appear to be punitive, to a corrective healing measure in the community. Now, in terms of after the resurrection, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because people think they just sat around Jerusalem and awaited the inevitable. They didn't. They took very seriously a wonderful line that we find in the last conclusion to the Gospel of Matthew, Matthew 28:20, and he says, go forth, teach all nations. Well, they did. Baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Spirit. They did. And I'm with you until the end of time. They are. So it goes on. Some of the apostles, well, Peter, for example, what does he do? He goes to Asia. He comes to Rome. He dies under the Emperor Nero and is buried up the street.
In the Vatican.
In the Vatican.
That's right.
We have Bartholomew, who dies as a martyr in Armenia. We have St. Paul, who for 35 years runs around all over Asia, certainly Western Europe too. And of course, he dies. St. Paul's outside the walls.
Here in Rome.
Exactly. We have Jude, who goes to Mesopotamia and who goes to Edessa. And we have St. Thomas. And St. Thomas, among other places, goes to India.
Okay, we've only done five of the apostles. Do you know where some of the other ones went?
A number of them stayed relatively close to what we would call the Holy Land. But within that context, they went all over the area of what we would know as the Middle East. A number of them left Jerusalem, for example, went out, came back. So you have James dying in the Jerusalem area and a number of apostles dying in the vicinity. But the idea of going forth is a persistent theme, and sometimes in regions well beyond their local territories, as in the case of Thomas.
Now, you mentioned Thomas. It was Thomas, the big apostle that we all remember as the doubting Thomas. Now, why did he choose to go to India as his destination? Would you say that was a good choice for him?
I think given the climate of the time, it was a remarkable, obvious choice. For example, we know that as early as probably the reign of the Jewish king Solomon in the 10th century, there were trade relations with India. There's all kinds of references in secular literature, such as Pliny in the 2nd century of the Christian era, who talks about for centuries there have been continual relationships of Malabar ships visiting the Persian Gulf and Aden, the Red Sea and Egypt and into Rome, and even complaints that a little too much attention was being paid to them, that in fact maybe the trade relations had to be reviewed from time to time. Again, we see this through various early Roman authors and historians. Certainly in the case of a Christian apostle, it would be logical to also want to go to an area which had well-known, well-recognized, well-established Jewish communities, as India did in the first century.
Really?
And it appears that Paul went to those areas foremost among all of those areas he did visit.
So they would have also spoken Hebrew.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they would have been familiar with the local culture and the people who were living there at the time. They probably opened many doors of welcome and hospitality, even though by this period, of course, Christianity was being seen as a heretical sect of Judaism and was not being entirely welcomed everywhere.
Now, I know that in the literature, it is sort of Thomas's presence in India is kind of seen more as legendary than as having a real physical archaeological proof that he was there. Or am I wrong?
I think your point is very well taken.
What evidence do we have that he actually lived and worked there?
I think there's a number of solid points of evidence. For one thing, we have to, I think, put aside the notion that evidence is only constituted by written documentation. We forget the longevity and the accuracy of oral tradition. And I'm going to give you an example outside this context. A very famous author, Alex Haley, in the United States of America, wrote an international book called Roots. And, of course, he wanted to find his roots, and he did so through pursuing oral tradition, which remained intact in the areas of Africa from which his ancestors originated. It was not a documentary source. It was an oral tradition source. In the same way, we have likewise venerable traditions in India, and also other forms of evidence I think we have to take seriously. We'll give you some example. It is very, very common in early ballads and art forms, even among Hindu culture, to celebrate Thomas. He was well known among various cultures other than Christian and Jewish within the Indian setting. And this is consistent. We find reference in the Syriac, Latin, and Greek fathers of the early church. Figures such as St. Ephrem speak of the unbroken tradition going back to St. Thomas. We have a strong Jewish presence, as I mentioned, since probably the 10th century BC. So it is absolutely logical that that a Christian figure of the status of an apostle would have gone there, given this great continuity. We have, in the earliest liturgies that of which we're aware, there have always been commemorations of the presence of Thomas and the role of St. Thomas. And we also know that historically there have been several Christian communities in India which appear to have their roots in the era that we associate with him. And then the tomb itself, it was excavated well by the Portuguese in the 16th century, but it was spoken about even by figures like Marco Polo in the 13th century, who said from time immemorial, Christian pilgrims and other non-Christians have venerated the tomb of the Apostle Thomas. So when you put all these factors together and then add to them the very specific oral traditions within the Christian community, I think the burden of evidence is solid and it is persuasive.
Father Bernard O'Connor is an official at the Pontifical Council for Eastern Churches.